Welcome back, everyone, to the Amateur Theatre Podcast and episode number 12. It's 2022, and we are kicking off with another interview, this time with Maddie Lloyd-Jones. Maddie played my Juliet back in the day and has gone on to do a number of other shows and focus her attentions on becoming a film actress. She's also running a really great blog at 5390.wordpress.com. So please do head over there and have a little look at that. There's a lot of great stuff on there about, I mean, a lot of it is about film and stuff, but she covers off various other things that you will definitely find interesting. So head over there and have a little look. As for today, we also cover off a load of stuff that I'm hoping will be interesting to you. And we follow my normal thread of looking at auditions, rehearsals and the show. And within that, we touch on nerves and the creation of partnerships and relationship building during the rehearsal process. And we even stop off to talk about stage kisses for a little bit. And Maddie gives us some really great insights into understanding your vulnerability and looking inwards when trying to work out or discover a character and bring that to life on the stage. So sit back and enjoy.
Something about acting being like a cathartic space where you can be vulnerable but in like a safe space within a character.
Okay.
So I think there's a draw to that for people, but then quite often, I know for myself anyway, I know that I'm a kind of person who doesn't like being vulnerable as myself in front of people at all.
Okay.
But then there's acting really requires that. So yeah, there's definitely. The draw to it in that you get that safe space to do that. But then also to do that, you have to do it.
Yeah, okay.
So I think there's a certain level of hesitation and why am I so desperate to do this? That can really easily feed into a lack of confidence.
Right. And how do you bridge the gap between... I'm just based on what you just said. How do you bridge the gap between like it being you and then it being the character? Because there is a period of time where you go into the rehearsal room where it's still you and you're still finding the character until you can put the mask on and you're actually presenting kind of like Juliet or whoever it is. So how are you overcoming that period of time? And again, I feel like I'm jumping ahead, but this is what I tend to do. We will come back to this maybe in more depth, but just generally like as a thought process for that first, like, decision to audition for Romeo and Juliet and then get into the room. How is it that you kind of like mentally can say, well, I'm still Maddie now, but at some point I will be Juliet and I'll be able to be a little bit more vulnerable because it won't just be Maddie in front of everyone.
Yeah. I think it comes from two angles in that sense. I think the way I create characters, I prefer to do it over a long space of time. So I think in many ways, that's why I enjoy theatre so much, because you get that opportunity to have a long rehearsal time. But for me to create a character, I like find the space in myself. So over rehearsal time, it's kind of like sinking gradually into A, the character, and B, a more comfortable area. Like it happens gradually over time. So it's not so nerve-wracking going into each individual rehearsal, because I am never trying to put the expectation on myself to bam, have the character, or bam, now it's vulnerable. It's right. Kind of easing myself into it naturally through like exploring how you even want the character to be in the first place at the same time.
Okay.
And then the other angle I think it comes from is oftentimes in theatre, you're working with a group of people you've never met before. And it's finding your common ground in that sense and your comfortableness with the people you're working with.
Yeah.
And if you're unlucky enough to not be comfortable with the people you're working with, find how you're going to deal with that in your own self anyway.
Okay.
I think that's why I enjoyed working with you so much, because we all just had the best time and I didn't know a single person walking into that rehearsal the first day and like still firm friends with all of them now, because there was such a, I think the rehearsal stage is the most like crucial part to making sure a show works, not just for the logistics of practicing, but for making sure that you work as a team and cultivating that in a sense, in that way, that everyone does feel comfortable enough to be vulnerable, to do what they need to do to make the show work.
I agree with that. We're just going to head down this track now because we're here. Mm-hmm. What would you say in your head then? We've skipped over the fact that you know, getting the confidence up to come and audition and stuff. I think we'll go back to that, because I'd like to talk about kind of that first audition process and then others that you've done subsequently. But in terms of like the room and the space, you're walking in for the first time. What is it that helps you kind of find that level of comfort in the first instance? And then how over time you allow yourself to be vulnerable? Because I totally agree with you. I'm 100%. Mm-hmm. And it's come out more and more in the conversations I had, but I've always thought it. You have to be totally vulnerable. You have to allow yourself to just, you know, it can potentially be a painful process, but if you're in a safe space, the best work comes when you're completely open to trying stuff, doing stuff, and not worried if you fail.
Definitely.
But I'm still trying to learn, and I want to kind of understand how that space is created. Because if you can, as a director, if I can manifest that space from the get-go, then we've got a lot more time where we're not all tiptoeing around each other going, oh, I don't know if Maddie would like to do this, or like, even down to like, and I'm going off on one now, but like, you know, just getting you guys to have that first kiss. It's like, I was already
just thinking of that. Yeah.
I was already thinking like, I know these guys will do it. I'm not worried that they won't do it. And I'm not worried that, you know, there'll be any issue with it, but kind of just broaching that subject already had, there was already barriers there. And it was like, oh, well, we'll wait a few weeks and we'll get, you know, feels comfortable. But so I guess all of that combined is just to ask, how in the first few weeks are you hoping the space will be and the people will be and what you like to do and feel? And then going forwards, kind of what helps you become more and more vulnerable and open to trying stuff?
I think what I've always loved about your style as a director is that it did feel comfortable from the very start. Like even the audition, I hadn't ever actually gone to an audition before that wasn't within school or within like a course that I was already doing. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was going to get a part guaranteed, you know, just by going. So I'd never done that before, and I was psyching myself out beforehand. But when I stepped in, there was just, I think you and your style with how you create theatre, and don't get too big headed from this, is that
I'm just trying to work out if this is going to make the cut or not, but we'll see.
Is that you're there because you genuinely want to create something good, and you don't want to create it in like these strict barriers of being like, oh, we can only do it this way if we want to do something good. And I think there's a big part of amateur theatre in that, is that because it's amateur, everyone who's there is there because they really want to do it, and they want to sacrifice their time from their other parts of their life to be there doing it, and because they love it. And I think there was a real sense of that, like you were there because you enjoyed it, and you weren't like that director who's like, oh, I've got so many better things to do with my time kind of deal, you know. It was welcoming, and that continued throughout. It was, I'm a big believer in any kind of work, that it's such a large portion of your life, work in general, and I mean just even if it's a small margin of your life, you should try and have fun with it. And when you are able to have fun, I think everyone's in a much better environment to strive for better, to strive for more, to work harder, because they feel happier and more supported or whatever, you know. If everyone's working on that level, I think you achieve greater things.
My only thought or reservation, and not with what you just said, but with my approach, is based around, there's this
fine line between let's all have fun and enjoy ourselves and let's put on the best show we can. And I have found many times in the past, whether it's just a scene or whether it's a whole play, that I do sometimes get the feeling like, oh crap, we could have done a lot better had we not been dicking around so much, or whatever it is. You know, if the space had been a slightly more regimented or whatever.
I think the best kind of like having fun all together to create something good is when it's clear that it's on the basis of the foundation that we are here to work, like full stop.
Okay.
That's the basic foundation that everything else rests on. And as long as we've all got that in mind, you can have fun in addition to that, but never sacrificing that.
Oh, I like that. Okay, yeah. Okay, so let's just jump back into the kind of the audition that you came to then, and and auditions in general. But I don't know if you want to use that as the focus. But how did you approach it, and how do you approach them? What's the kind of like? What do you feel like the job of an actor is in terms of prep for an audition and how they might get the part?
I think one of the biggest things, obviously, with auditions is nerves. And I think regardless of how professional you are, going into a room where you're being, I feel like judged isn't the right word, but you are to a degree.
You are being judged. I mean, even in the nicest amateur audition, and I'm still sat there going, right, is she good for this part or that part? There's still an element of like, yeah, judgment.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's when you know that's happening, I think it can be very easy for nerves to get the better of you. As an actor, the best way to help that is to be really in touch with yourself and know that how you react yourself to nerves, and then coach yourself through it and kind of make yourself see the bigger picture. And so I know myself who can get stupidly nervous, like stupidly so. I just knew that if I only let myself stay contained to those nerves, then I wouldn't be able to do anything I wanted to do with my life. And I came up with a little analogy for myself when I was at Thorpe Park one summer.
I'm ready. I'm loving this. Here we go.
It's good. So you'll be in the queue for the most scary looking roller coaster you've ever seen in your life. You're looking up at it and you're like, I'm going to die on this ride. Why am I in this queue? And it'll be a 2-hour queue. In the entire 2 hours, you'll be absolutely bricking it. But then you get on, you step on the ride and you have a really fun 3 minutes. And then you're like, I'd do that again. So all you have to do is tell yourself, you just need to step on and it's fine. And it's not half as bad as what you build it up to be. Yeah. Like the majority of the time, it really isn't anything as bad as what your mind tells you it could be. And so I think, yeah, it's a combination of understanding yourself and knowing how to manage yourself and seeing the bigger picture in terms of approaching an audition.
Okay, that's nice. Can I just quickly dissect, maybe not specifics that you can pull out, but what are the nerves? What is it? What is it that's creating that? I know the answer for myself, but generally what would you say are the things you're overcoming and understanding about yourself in order to get you in the room? Is it like failure or is it?
I think the vast majority of people to some degree or another have a fear of failure. I think it's natural human nature, and that in itself is difficult, but then when it's something that you actually really care about, the stakes are higher in that sense. And so it's always been quite tricky for me, especially when I was younger before this, knowing that I wanted to act so desperately, but also knowing that I was petrified of putting myself in a space to do that.
Yeah.
It's a really weird, counterintuitive thing. Yeah, so nerves for me has been about fear of failure, but also fear of the unknown, especially in going to a first audition, but any new project you start, to a degree, there's a lot that's unknown, even if it's people you've worked with many times.
Is there any level of like, and again, this is me trying to pick your brain so that a director listening might be able to go, okay, I can maybe help people overcome that by creating an audition that counters some of those things. I'm always conscious that when I see people who are super nervous, I try and just break that down into like, what is this person suffering from? How can I make that those elements of their pain go away so they can do the best audition possible? Because again, as you said, if you don't think about that 3 minutes on the roller coaster and all you're thinking about is the 2 hours before, you're going to get into that room and you're going to be so messed up that you can't, you, even if you're amazing, you won't present the best work you can.
Yeah.
So again, I totally understand why failure is one of them, but if it, you know, is it embarrassment or is there anything else that kind of feeds into it that you're having to overcome that maybe, you know, someone like myself can put your mind at ease or the person's mind at ease?
Mm-hmm. What definitely put me at ease in your audition, and then I've done a couple of other auditions like it as well, was not having an expectation of having a memorized script or audition thing. So we arrived and there was a selection of monologues to choose from. Just having that and knowing that I had it in front of me was enough to eradicate any kind of fear of, oh, what if I can't remember the lines? Like, that was gone. And I think a huge part is, oh, what if I mess up the words?
Right.
And even if you're not like stood there reading it, like knowing that it's in your hand and you can just refer to it takes away that stress. So you can relax more into it, knowing that you've got that. You can refer to it. And I think especially in an audition when you haven't had any time to memorize or any expectation to have a fully created character, you can just say, okay, well, I'll just give it what I've got, you know?
Yeah.
And that definitely helps. I think also a warm introduction from everyone who sat there in front of you helps so much, because then you're not like, who are these strangers judging me? It's like, oh, this is Mike, this is Cheryl, cool, I'm on board with that now. Those are the two things that very much helped me. And I know that in other auditions I've gone to, I've definitely preferred that approach.
Right, okay. So what's the next step for you? So let's say, you get sent the script and you're preparing for a read through in the beginning of rehearsals. Are you doing any prep work beforehand? Like, what's your next sort of phase that you go through?
I try not to consume myself with it, because then I think it's very easy to get overwhelmed and that can manifest itself in many ways. But I think to get overwhelmed before you've even gone in can put you in a dangerous position within yourself.
And when you say overwhelmed, you mean just you're just thinking too much about it. You've consumed too much stuff regarding.
Yeah. And kind of just running away with pressure that you put on yourself and expectations. And yeah. So what I try to do is actually a trick that Audrey Hepburn did with her scripts, that her son spoke about in an interview years later, because neither of her children were performers, and I think it was her oldest son asked her, really fascinated, like, how on earth do you remember all of your lines? How on earth do you go about acting and being a character in that way? And she said that to take the stress off herself, she read her script last thing at night before she fell asleep and first thing in the morning when she woke up, and trusted that at least at the very start of the process, that was enough. And then all the time of her day didn't need to be stressing about whether she was learning lines, her progress with lines. It's just about familiarizing yourself with it and getting it on your level in that sense. And yeah, so that's still the approach, more so with theatre, that's still the approach that I do, because also it's just fun to be like, oh yeah, I do Audrey Hepburn's technique, because no one can fight with that either. One of the
unless you came in and don't know your lines at all and you don't know anything's going on,
yeah,
you can't just say, no, I did the Audrey Hepburn technique, it's all good, don't you? Like,
it's all good. Yeah, definitely. Do that at the start, and then when more along you get, do actually start learning the lines of the day as well. I'd like to stress that. But the other big component at the start was, if you've got like a love interest, I think the most important thing you can do is get comfortable with them on one level or another. So are there any complications to us kissing each other for the next 6 months? Like, what's our relationship statuses? Like, are we okay with this? Is there anything that's going to be uncomfortable personally with this? And going back to what you said earlier, the first time we did actually kiss was in the rehearsals, and again, you'd waited a certain amount of weeks, and you
I waited a lot of weeks.
Yeah. we were starting to just get by with it. And you said right at the start of the rehearsal, you're like, right, today guys, we are going to be doing real kissing. And we were like, okay, yeah. And obviously it was a little bit awkward, but we were comfortable enough with each other at that point. And again, we were all there knowing that we were there working on it and it was required. So it was okay. And also the scene that you chose to do for our first kiss was death scenes. So it wasn't actually both of us having to go in together. It was one of us lying comatose on the floor and the other one kissing them.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant. It was basically like the best way you can go into doing a first kiss with someone in terms of like stage, because there wasn't any of that awkwardness of both having to do it at the same time. It was just like, right, we're going through it. I'm going to do it. Just lie there, take it. It'll all work out fine. And then once it was done, it was like, oh,
yeah,
we've done it now. So now it'll be fine. And that really led the way for the whole rest of the show, really, in terms of how comfortable it was, because it really is just a stage direction after that point.
Yeah.
It's just working around the, again, the nerves and awkwardness that lead up to it.
Yeah, it was a really weird thing. I have thought back on it a couple of times, just in terms of like, I understand there's certain elements of it that are a bit more personal. You know, it's mm-hmm. more than just touching someone on the shoulder or giving them a hug. There is an element that crosses a certain line. And although it's only a kiss, there are elements of it that, you know, you have to be aware of. There are partners, there are whatever. It isn't just one kiss. You know, it's not like we do it once, okay, get to the shows and you do it at the shows.
Yeah.
It's going to have to happen a few times in rehearsal. So actually, yeah, there's a lot more to think about than just, oh, come on, guys, it's just a kiss. What's going on? You know, there mm-hmm. is slightly more to it than just that. It is a shame that every kiss doesn't have one dead body being kissed by someone else. But, you know, in an ideal world, that would be the scenario. But, you can't have everything you want. Okay, no, that's interesting, though. It's nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Stage kissing is something that I've not really thought about. Is you know, I don't know, you don't mm-hmm. come across it all that much. But yeah, it's nice that those things kind of fell well with you and it felt comfortable to do it in the end. And then the last thing I wanted it to be was this weird, awkward thing where I just go, come on, guys, kiss now. He's like, because then,
kiss.
Yeah, exactly. Because then you end up, I don't know, it just feels, mm-hmm. you need it to be as natural as possible, I suppose. That fed really nicely into the idea that, or from the idea that you guys had already begun to form a relationship. That, mm-hmm. And again, that feeds back into the thing you originally said with creating that space where to engender a level of like comfort and a space where you can be vulnerable, getting to know mm-hmm. people and getting interacting with them on a personal level inside the rehearsal room and outside the rehearsal room
mm-hmm.
begins to shape a kind of, as you say, a foundation level, or maybe one up from we're here to do the work, guys. And then you've got this next level that's like, you know, there's a communal friendship that's going on, and you know, we can interact with each other on a personal mm-hmm. level. So how, and I just want to focus one more little second on that before we go on to sort of like creating characters and stuff
mm-hmm.
in terms of that dynamic, what were the other kind of, was it just that, you know, you had other people like, you know, Charlie and Martha and others within the space, how was the, because I can see how you and Alex can go and grab a coffee together mm-hmm. and have those conversations. How was the whole thing being shaped in your head, or how was the, you know, those relationships being formed? Was it just the fact that you were in a group effort to create a show, or was there other stuff that mm-hmm. was happening that kind of was allowing it to become more and more natural to kind of be together and interact?
I think at the start, when we were doing once weekly rehearsals, that was And it was just me and Alex who were kind of getting to know each other outside, which we started doing maybe a few weeks in. That was, because obviously when you're going into, typically theatre has a big cast as well, so there's a lot of people to know. So I think in that sense, there's also a kind of, it's a little bit more relaxed because it's like, oh, I don't have, there's no way I'm going to get to be best friends with everyone in one rehearsal. So you've all got that shared thing of, oh, we're all new. And by doing the scenes and, you know, just basic rehearsing stuff, you find like the common ground with stuff. You find little jokes, you start learning about people. And I do think also as well, just in the characters you play, you kind of slip into those roles a little bit. Like Kate, I still kind of look at kind of like, she's a mother figure to me, you know, like everything kind of came along quite naturally in that sense. Same with Charlie as well. But I think where it really changed and where I was really like, oh, we are having more fun as friends, and friends first and then colleagues as well, was when we started especially doing outdoor rehearsals multiple times a week.
Okay.
Because we had that gorgeous summer, or it was just when we really started doing multiple rehearsals a week and in different spaces and just trying stuff out. Because it was, you've got that excitement of it being like a field trip, you know, you're like, oh, we're in a different space. That's exciting. And just different surroundings. You see other sides of people and you get more of a common ground. And then when seeing each other more regularly, when the more regular rehearsals were happening, you do just get to a point where you're all getting to know each other all genuinely, and you start walking home together, or you start all of that, really.
Yeah.
If any of that makes sense.
No, it does. Yeah. I wonder, I've never been one for doing like games in the rehearsal room early on, but I have read a lot and listened to people kind of their opinions on it. How, and the reason I ask now is because it kind of combines the two things you just talked about. It is probably not great for people who are really nervous and don't want to be vulnerable straight away, but it's probably quite good for building and forming relationships because you're having to all do stupid stuff together. But I've as yet not found the perfect way to integrate them into my rehearsals, but I'm trying. I do want to do it, but I wonder what your thoughts are and whether you've had experience with them and how they've kind of played out.
I think that's a really interesting point, actually, because I think my opinions are pretty much the same as yours. I can recognize there being great value in breaking the ice in that way and making everyone be on the same level of making themselves look stupid, basically.
Yeah.
And also there being an element of fun. I think there's so many different theatre games, and some are more intense than others, and some are just kind of basically just silly games. And then there are some that require a bit more. And yeah, I don't really know where to find that line. I think my approach to acting personally, I haven't done drama school or anything like that. And I'd say personally, I've always been a bit standoffish to kind of techniques, I guess, like practice enforced techniques. Because I don't think when it comes to acting, one technique can suit everyone. Acting is such a bizarre thing. You have to find each individual person's way of doing it. And so, yeah, the difficulty with games is that there isn't one game suits all.
Yeah.
There are some that have more of like a applicability to a wider audience. But yeah, I think there are some that could make people quite skittish, particularly at the start, if they're with people that they're getting to know as well. But then there are some people who absolutely love them.
Yeah, the crazy folk.
Yeah, I agree.
I think part of the reason why I haven't fully integrated them into the rehearsal process is I'm really worried that the actors are like, oh, you come and join in then. You come and if we're going to dance around like horses, I'm like, fuck that shit.
Not happening. It
says director on my chair, all right? It doesn't say actor.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm just going to quickly go off on a tangent because I just made a quick note. And I will forget to ask it if I don't ask it now. Where do you find, or where have you sort of seeked out your knowledge base? What, you know, what theories are you reading about? What, because I just only because you just mentioned, like, and I do totally agree, and I'm in the process of kind of mapping out in my own head the techniques that might work for me and the way I can implement them with certain casts and in certain shows. But where have you and where do you kind of source your more technical information? And we'll go on to the practical stuff in a bit, but just because you mentioned the technical stuff now, what is it you're looking at or have looked at, if anything? Are you reading, about all of them and just getting a surface level thing, or have you just found one that fits with you slightly better? And whether it's by name or just by the virtue of the practice, I guess.
In all honesty, I haven't really done much research into techniques since A-level. So, like, you touch on it in GCSE drama, but where I went, where I did my A-levels was at a specific arts college. So they had a really good drama department. And my two-year course there, they really took us through, like, a few weeks at a time, focusing on a certain practitioner and their techniques and working in their style and trying out their methods. And I found that really interesting and fascinating, but also really exhausting. And in certain practitioners, I found that I was really, like, standoffish to it and couldn't really actually involve myself, because I was like, I don't actually think this is getting me a better performance, and not in, like, a snobby way, but, and I don't think there's one practitioner who does everything perfectly or applies to everyone in that sense. I like knowing it, taking what you do, and again, just doing stuff that's natural and not even being able to put a name on it, even if it is someone's exact technique.
Yeah.
I've always had the instinct, but not been able to necessarily recognize it, but over the years have really been able to acknowledge and embrace it. For me personally, but I think it could apply to a lot more actors, I think you have to reach inward to become a better actor. The greater understanding you have of yourself, your emotions, how you react to certain things, how things affect you, the all that kind of stuff there, I think that's of more value, not just in terms of how you approach managing yourself through acting, but how you find characters and how you know how to bring those emotions that you need out, because you understand where they exist in yourself.
Okay.
And I think that's quite a daunting thing, because I don't think any of us really ideally want to look too deep into ourselves, because it's too scary. There's too much going on there. It's too confusing. I think we're naturally inclined to shy away from it.
Box it all up. Leave it hidden somewhere.
Yeah, especially as Brits. We're very good at that. Like, just keep it down, smiles and a cup of tea, you know? But I think as an actor, it's one of, and just as a human being in general, especially in this day and age, it's one of the most valuable things you can do to really try and get through that uncomfortableness and get to a point where you understand yourself. And I think that's where I've progressed as an actor. Over the years, I've been able to understand where I'm vulnerable, which, and understanding yourself takes away fear of things, so that can only help. But then it also means that when you're presented with, for example, a big crying scene in front of an audience or a big crew, that you're like, okay, actually, it's okay. And I know where this comes from. I know how to conjure it up and make it happen. I think going inside yourself is far more valuable. Well, there is obviously value in research, I'm not to dispute that, but I think as long as you're applying that to yourself as an individual and not just a person who is following techniques, then that's the best way, personally.
So I have a follow-up question that takes us down a more psychoanalytical route, but I'm going to ask it. Good, perfect. So I really like that concept. I like the idea, and I like, especially, I mean, I always love ideas that an amateur can implement without too much hassle or pain. And I think going inside yourself is certainly something, I mean, it's going to be hassle and pain, but you don't need to have a teacher next to you telling you how to do that.
Exactly,
but,
yeah.
But I think what they do need to know is what is it that you're, once you get in there, what are you doing? Are you just sorting shit out in your head? What are you understanding? What are you looking to understand about yourself? And what is it that allows you to come up to the surface or even come out of that room where all those boxes are with all that weird shit that you've kind of like put away. Mm-hmm. And how have you sorted it? What is it that you're doing? And I presume it's an ongoing process because you're constantly absorbing new things in your life. There's constantly more trauma, or there's more, you know, mm-hmm. happiness, excitement, and there's a changing dynamic in how you view the world. Mm. What is it that you're sorting? How is it that you're able to kind of like just reorder your life so that you can call on those specific emotions and you know where to look, you know what channels stuff is going to come up through, rather than it being a mess down there and you going, oh, I've got to cry. What do I, oh, let's think about dead granny or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is it that you're kind of doing internally to allow that to kind of happen? If you can put it into words.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure I can massively, but I think it comes down to a goal to recognize and understand what's going on inside your mind rather than fix or change, because fixing or changing what's inside you is a huge daunting task, b teaches you that what you've already got is bad in some way or unhelpful and can just make it quite distressing from the start if that's your goal of going in, is to magic everything so that everything is perfect and everything's in neat areas that you can reach from where you need. I think if you go in and be like, it's a mess, but that's what the brain is. The brain is a mess. Like, and know that as an actor, most of the characters you'll be playing are a mess as well. I think the most interesting characters are a mess. And that's why Shakespeare is so brilliant, because they're all having a great time, those characters. So just going in with a goal to understand and be compassionate in a way, not in a way that excuses everything you think, but just be like, actually, it's totally fine that my brain isn't orderly, because whose is? And as long as you go in knowing that, then you can be calm when you're searching for how your emotions work, for how you can apply those, because it's just like looking into a toolkit. Like, it's a messy toolkit, your brain. That's my new analogy. Your brain is toolkit. It doesn't have to everything be like hung up on a wall with those little chalk outlines, but you know, it's in there somewhere, so you can root around.
Find that hammer you need. Okay, so good. I like that analogy a lot. toolkits are very, that's a buzzword for me for this whole thing, because I think that fits with a lot of areas of amateur theatre and theatre in general. But I'm going to mine what you said slightly deeper, because I get now that you're saying, okay, it's not about changing, organizing. It's not about kind of having it all set up perfectly so you can walk in the room and go, today I'm playing a sad person. Here is all my sad emotions. Let's see what we can use. But so how are you? Let's both agree that you're right and the messy toolbox is the perfect analogy for this. How are you then, what are you doing on the surface or outside your body with the character that then you're holding their hand as you walk into your brain room to rummage through this? What is it that you're setting yourself up to do? Are you looking at the script and going, right, these moments I need this emotion, these moments I need this interaction, and therefore let's go searching for those? Or are you waiting to the moment that they come in the rehearsal room and then you're heading inside, or you're doing the prep prior because you've read the script? Like, how are we meshing these things together so that your character is, you know, you're mining yourself for the elements of your character that you want to display?
I think the way I go about that doing personally is I try first to understand the character separately to myself and see how I relate to that.
Okay.
And I'm not sure I consciously decide to do that. Just in hindsight, I think that's the way I do.
So you mean the character on the page, yeah?
Okay. So particularly at the start of a project when I'm just finding out about the character and I'm just at the early days of figuring out how I'm going to go about doing this, I'll just be about my daily life, just thinking about them. And I'll be like, why do they do this? What could be the deeper reasoning for their actions here? Like, what? So not just the fronting motive, I guess, but how that goes deep back into who they are as a person, not just how they go about their daily life, and then finding where I can relate to that, or even if I don't relate, like if I'm not the same, which I rarely am, how the times I felt that same rooting emotion, if that makes sense, and understanding the motive in that sense. And yeah.
And are you doing that? Are you taking the whole script and are you making notes? Are you, how does it physically manifest itself? Are you just reading it and just thinking as you read, this is an area that I, you know, Maddie, make a mental note at this moment. Sadness is a thing. So what's going on that? Or are you actually physically kind of annotating a script or filling a notebook with stuff?
It's a combination of everything.
Okay.
I think it's just keeping it on the forefront of the mind as much as you can, but as like a casual basis. Not, so it's not sit down, let's annotate the script, see what's happening here. For me, it's okay, let's mull on this as I go about my day. Like while I do my shop around Tesco, let's think about maybe this one specific scene. And while I'm picking out my fruit and veg, I'll think about what's been going on before this scene, what's the entire life led up to before this scene. So for example, with Juliet, like the way I very much approached it is knowing Juliet as an individual, because her and Romeo have three glorious days together. But Juliet existed for her entire life before those 3 days. So nothing of her personality can be based off Romeo. It's all about who she was as a person. And so I was trying very much in that case to find her life experiences there, and then be able to, even if I couldn't relate, be able to find my empathy in that. And hopefully translate that.
Yeah, and is that done on what sort of basis are you doing that? Is it like, okay, in the rehearsal we did act two scene one, I'm now going to think about act two scene one because we've blocked it or we've got it ready? Or are you looking at a rehearsal schedule and going, okay, this week coming up we've got two rehearsals and we're doing act one scene two and we're doing act three scene five, and they're the ones I'm going to look at and focus on? Or is it just an amorphous thing where it's all of it together, and as you say, like, because you've read the script, you're beginning to know the character, you're beginning to develop ideas around that character's past and their kind of what shaped them as an individual prior to the play, and then as we head into the play, like how, at what moments are those triggers being kind of sparked with you, if there is any?
Knowing rehearsal schedules and knowing what you're going into, I've always really taken that in mind. And so specifically the day of, I'll be thinking in advance of like, okay, we're doing this, so maybe let's start trying to think this, but again, not with a goal of being like, oh, okay, I've got it. Just kind of having lots of ideas that then you can take into the rehearsal room and see what lands, see where everyone else is. That's the way that I personally manage it. Have like a basic running thought about the play as a whole and the character as a whole, sort of running more or less consistently, but then coming into rehearsals where you know you're doing a specific thing, be thinking about it a little bit more focused, and then coming out, be thinking, oh, okay, what felt cool about that? What felt really good? What do I think? What other thoughts am I having on that? And repeat the process really. And then I think when you're doing that so consistently in a rehearsal process where you know that you're going back 2-3 times a week or however much, that keeps a running thread which ties up nicely at the end.
And so that's a good point for a director to take on board. Get that rehearsal schedule out, make sure you stick to it. Actors like to know what's coming up. If you start faffing around with it, and it does happen, obviously you get people who call in sick or can't make it, so it does change, but just as a general theme or general idea for a director, that it's helpful for actors to have a knowledge of what's coming up so they can prepare. When you get into the meat of it, so if we are in agreement that we've got these kind of levels that we create, we've got this foundation of, let me just put in the foundation that we said right at the start, which is like, I'm here to work. So I'm definitely going to, I'm in the space. My focus and attention is on doing the best work I can. I need to have a space that is making me feel comfortable and allows me to be vulnerable. And I'm going to come back to that vulnerability in just a second. And that means like getting to know the cast, understanding or having a director that understands how to shape a room and have a space where people are feeling comfortable and not worried about what they're going to say or do, or And that, and I agree with you. That's about maybe not being too regimented in, we will order it this way and this is how it's going to be done. And you will move here at this time, whatever. And then you are personally doing the specific way that you're shaping the early stages of your character around working from within you, relating that to your character and understanding how that those two marry together.
Mm-hmm.
As then we start doing, and that, you know, that obviously will feed through the whole process, I presume. It feels like it will.
Mm-hmm.
How are you then approaching that from a, like, how does it become that it's just that smooth? I come into the scene, he comes to the scene, we're just like, it's like water flowing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get a feel of what it takes to kind of create that those interactions that feel natural when an audience is kind of watching?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just doing it over and over again, or is it like,
I think it's
that was a terrible question, by the way.
No. I genuinely I think it's really interesting. I think it's about, I mean, they say that acting is about reacting, right?
Yeah.
I think however much prep you do on your own, you can have an idea, but then you go in and if another actor is doing something differently with it, if you are just startled and be like, oh, I wasn't expecting that, then that can kind of throw things off. But I think if you give the basics of it in discussion beforehand and of what, like, what your intentions are and talk your way through it, but run the scenes and try different ways, have like, see what works, see, or maybe this time try with this, is a really cool way of building something in that way.
Yeah.
I know specifically we did this with Tyrus and Alex, when it was the scene where Juliet goes to the friar at the end and Paris is there. That was really interesting the way we did that. None of us were entirely sure on how that scene was going to play. Like, we're all comfortable with it, but we weren't sure how we were going to make it sparks fly. And then it was a rehearsal. We were just kind of trying things out and almost being a bit like jokey with it, being a bit silly with it. And we started discovering these cool bits where we're like, that's really funny, but if we play it as if it's serious, it will have this really weird undertone that will work really well. So it was just kind of having the freedom in discovering little bits like that. And you were stood watching us going, that's really cool, try that, but with this way of delivery or something like that. It was kind of like picking and choosing it and creating it as it advanced. And in like a really short space of time, like literally half an hour, we went from a scene that we knew but weren't entirely sure of to a scene that we were like, this is cool, I cannot wait to do this. Yeah, having that flexibility at the start and then growing it to be more concise from that. Yeah.
Is there other stuff that you kind of want in place that will help you with this process that you're going through?
I'm not sure I can say there's anything I specifically feel like I want, but I have worked with a director in theatre before who did something really interesting, which isn't really applicable to every piece of work, but it was before one rehearsal, we were, each actor who was in the scene was pulled aside and she told us a little secret of something that had happened that day to them that we weren't going to share with anyone else, that would obviously influence how our character was feeling in that moment.
Okay.
And so we'd done the scene once just as we were doing it, and then she each took us aside with these secrets. And when we came back, it was really interesting how it was the exact same scene, but it had all changed because everyone was resting on something else. So that was a really interesting concept to me. And again, can't be used all the time, but I think in terms of preparation for an actor specifically coming into a scene, that's an interesting thing that can be experimented with. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few little tricks, I suppose, that they can, yeah, I've heard a few things like that are quite good. In terms of the, and yeah. That, would you, do you as an actor go in knowing what your kind of motivation and objective is within the scene and still kind of try and have a through line to get to that point?
Mm.
Or do you come in and and again, this might be different for different scenes and different shows and, mm-hmm. and film and theatre might be different as well. But are you kind of, how are you structuring your approach to the scene you're about to enter? Do you come in as an actress going, okay, I know I've got I'm going to end up with X, Y, and Z happening to me, but prior to that, mm-hmm. I'm just going to bounce off what's happening? Or do you know in 3 minutes' time, someone's going to come and say this to me and I'm going to react to that? And then a minute later, someone else is going to walk in the door. Do you have a structure to how you mm-hmm. kind of play out those scenes? And I still talk about rehearsals. Obviously, when we get to the shows, mm-hmm. you know, there's maybe slightly more rigidity in that because you have mapped out what's going on. But just in terms of creating a dynamic kind of response.
I think there's a basic understanding of where we've just come from to get to this scene and knowing what happens next. But knowing it's difficult because I think it's very rare that anything is rehearsed in a chronological order. And I don't really like it being rehearsed in a chronological order anyway. So I think you can kind of just influence what comes after and before and know that there's flexibility. I think as long as you've got a kind of basic understanding that you know you're not going to stray a ridiculous way away from, you can have a more of an individual journey within a contained scene.
Okay. What is the strongest motivation then? What in terms of your character and your interactions with what's going on, where are you sort of setting your target? Is the target the next critical point in the scene or the play, or is the mm-hmm. critical point that you know that at the end Juliet is going to die?
Mm-hmm.
And is there a beeline for that, or have you forgotten that and your interaction is purely based on what's in front of you? Or is it a mash of the two, or what's the...
I think it's a mash of the two, but come to think of it, I think specifically with Juliet, knowing that it builds up to her deciding to take her own life like that, I was very intentional, I think, of trying to find the reasoning behind that in everyone around her, not just because this guy that she's met has died in front of her, you know? So I didn't want it to be like, oh, she killed herself for love, because I really don't think she did. Like, every interaction she has with everyone else in that play, like, people are being very difficult to this poor little teenage girl, left, right, and center. And I think you have to be really receptive and highlight that in that sense. And because these are the characters that surround her in her life and ultimately influence her in every decision she makes. And I think you have to be receptive of that, even if it means changing you, because it's the way that it makes it believable with the whole cast on stage, and I think will be better for it at the end.
No, so, I like that. I think that's a great idea. I've not had it framed in that way, in that obviously a lot of people are very aware of the central kind of objective and motivation mm-hmm. behind various things. But actually the idea that if you know, and Juliet is quite a unique mm-hmm. case in that she's going to die. Mm-hmm. But actually whatever I'm sure within a lot of plays, you can find that ultimate kind of like ending for the character and mm-hmm. work backwards and say, look, shit, how did that person get to that point? What mm-hmm. is it that's hitting them and knocking them through the channels and the paths to feed them to that end goal? Because it's weird. And again, it's nice that you did frame it that way, because actually, if we look at our lives, we don't have an end. We don't know, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, in 50 years time, I'm going to be sat in a nursing home playing a banjo and eating pureed food. I can, you know, it's a rough idea that I might be, but or that I get hit by a bus tomorrow. And mm-hmm. Your life is not being specifically shaped by that outcome,
mm-hmm.
but it's quite nice that you can reverse engineer a character
mm-hmm.
based on knowing where the play ends. Even if if people watching aren't aware of that, mm-hmm. they will go home and they'll say, I know why she killed herself. I know why she got to that point.
Yeah.
It's because, not just because she, you know, she was in love with this person and thought they were dead and whatever. It's because this person, that person, you know, all the way through she was being battered and bashed around to that point. So I actually, it's a really nice way of looking at it and approaching it.
Yeah, all the puzzle pieces that make it understanding. So it's not just a, oh, what's happening now? It's a, oh, this is a natural culmination of everything we've just sat and watched.
Yeah, and it won't actually become true or relevant maybe until the end of the play.
Yeah.
Which is really nice as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like at the end of act two, you suddenly go, oh, I know, you know, you might start getting an inkling of why this person's making these decisions, mm-hmm. but maybe not until the ultimate kind of end game for that person plays out that you suddenly go, shit, all that stuff, all that thing, all that crap they were going through has naturally led to this point.
Yeah,
so it's definitely. Important. Yeah. So maybe it is important for an actor to realize what the final outcome is, as well as the look at the individual scenes and what kind of those smaller motivations are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like it. Mm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Now I've thought about that. I'm quite interested in that as well. Yeah.
I might use that again. You do use that. Okay. So, that's a nice kind of wrap up of kind of rehearsals and stuff. That shaping of the character in that way seems a nice kind of tie, a bow to put on all the stuff you said about how you generate your character. That's really cool.
Mm.
So let's, and again, I just to tie that bow for us both, all the stuff we've said about how you create character, and again, this is just to say, is there anything else you want to add? But the idea that we're working on it individually, we're looking at the play, we are kind of slowly mapping bits out together in the first few weeks, and then as more rehearsals feed in, we're interacting with the cast more conversations happen between the actors, and then we're looking for that fluidity of the scenes and the consistency of the character, which again we've just talked about being shaped by kind of ultimate objectives, and also the individual scenes being slightly more fluid because we're allowing ourselves to be a bit more open to kind of change, gives us this rounded play where if everyone is doing that and we're ultimately all heading towards the same destination, we should be moving together, even though we're allowing it to go left and right a bit, because that's where the nuances and the fun is.
Mm-hmm.
What do you require for the kind of the run into the shows, mm-hmm. to be happy and confident that when you step onto the stage, you and everyone else is ready? Is there anything that mm-hmm. you want to have made sure that you've done in the latter stages of the rehearsals,
mm-hmm.
in order to just not be worried? Because obviously you're going to be nervous anyway, mm-hmm. as you say, because there's an audience and things change and whatever. But is there anything that a director should be looking to kind of just have touched on or have done? Or, mm. you know, I'm talking like, do we need to have 5 full runs of the show? Or, you know, what's kind of,
mm-hmm.
do you want to have definitely been in your costume more than once? Although in amateur theatre, that's pretty tricky. But, you know, mm-hmm. or done at least 10 rehearsals with your props? Or is there a kind of...
I'm not entirely sure, because I know that me as a person is, I make myself very willing to just adapt and be like, yes, this is fine, this is okay, we can make it work.
Cool.
That
is what a director loves, by the way.
Good. Okay, good.
That one person that's like, I'm not going on stage until I see that this prop is here and I know that this button is done up on my costume or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm more than happy to just hide in a box at the back of the stage and just do a costume change myself. I think obviously it is for the audience, but I think the rehearsal process and everything felt so fun and special beforehand. I really trusted that we were creating something good.
Right.
And so I wasn't going out to an audience to prove that what we were doing was good. I was going out to show them that what we were doing was good. So I was kind of doing it for us, and they were just going to enjoy it.
Right.
That's rather good. Than setting out to try and impress them in that sense. But I know that that doesn't, or I think that's a bit lovey-dovey to apply to everything, but I know that I was besotted with a play. I think that's common knowledge at this point, and so it just felt really cool to get out there and be like, yeah, this is all the fun I've been having for all these months. Look right. how cool it is. Enjoy.
Yeah.
And know that, and also find the fun in things going wrong. Because I think if you panic over things going wrong, if you only panic about things going wrong, then everything becomes very difficult for you. As long as you can be quick on your feet, adapt, make it work and then laugh about it later. I think that's all you can do, really. Just try not to let anything throw you. Have like any kind of moments of panic, just put on a little tray for you to pick up later when you get home and go, oh my God, that was a nightmare. And then just brush it off and then come back in and just be ready to problem solve and have fun again.
Okay. And do you like, or would you, do you want directors to be watching and giving notes, or is it a kind of like a free for all? Because I've heard a lot of both actors and directors say that once the shows come, it's theirs, it's the actors. So it's less of the directors now and more of the actors to kind of pull it together. And if things change a little bit, they change because that's a dynamic that the actors have created. It's not for the director then to step in and go, hold on a second, guys, you know.
I think that's interesting. Yeah, I think technical notes, especially in doing the actual performances, especially in amateur theatre, oftentimes you're only in the actual performance space the day before, maybe, or like when you're actually doing it. So there will be things that you need to adapt to that you will need to hear from the director from.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely very valuable. And I think, yeah, it's when it's at that point, there's only so much you can change. But I think you can always welcome new stuff in if it is right. And if there is something that's spotted, like, that was really interesting tonight, I'd like to see more of that next show. That's really cool. Like that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
When it's on the basis of collaboration, we've all worked together to create something, which is, again, quite common in amateur theatre, it never really fully becomes just the actor's thing. I think the actor obviously has ownership over their character and they know what they're doing with it, but there is still that community spirit where we're all helping each other out in that sense. So I personally would welcome that at any point, even if it's on last night. Maybe
last
not then.
Last night's a little bit rude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything in your mind that kind of like you might think will be relevant for anyone listening that they could take? It doesn't have to be, because like I say, we've covered a lot of ground, but is there anything that kind of you have in your head that is useful information, maybe, that whether that be in amateur or whether that be the other stuff you've done kind of outside in film and stuff, is there, you know,
in any working environment, but specifically in creative industries, you have to really try and keep any sort of ego at bay. It's very common in creative industries and renowned for it, but you shouldn't just take it as a, oh, it happens, or, oh, I'm an actor, so I have to have an ego. It's the times when you're actually keeping that at bay and not making that part of the picture, that things are really good. And when as many people in a project as possible are on that same level with you, that's when you create real magic.
Yeah.
I think that's what was the most special thing about that production was as well. And any productions I've gone into later, the best ones have been where everyone was on the same level, really, when there's no hierarchy or pull like that, you know?
No, I agree.
Yeah. Again, just my ethos in most things in life, really, is to do everything on the baseline of understanding that there's a seriousness to what you're doing. There's something that needs to be done. There's a task, there's a job, there's something you're working towards. But then find a way to make it enjoyable or have value on top of that, so that you can move on to the next thing with lessons you've learned as a better actor, or whatever it is you're doing. You're always learning and always adapting and never really expecting yourself to get to a point where you're done, like, I am now the best actor, director, whatever, I've done it all, I'm great, I've achieved it. Like, you're never too late to pick stuff up, just go for it, I think.